Hi guys, quick one before we get into the episode. This episode is sponsored by Zencastr, which is the production suite that I've used from the very beginning of this podcast. And if you're interested in starting your own podcast, hang around at the end of the episode for our 30% discount referral code. Thanks.
So our podcast is called Right and Wrong.
Are these your notes? These are your notes about what we're going to say?
Anything. Nailed it. It's a short answer.
So how many novels did you not finish?
Oh my God, so many.
It was perfect. What is she talking about? This is nonsense.
Ooh, a spicy question. I love it.
This is it, guys. The big secret to getting published is you have to write a good book. You heard it here first.
Hello, and welcome back to the Right and Wrong podcast. This week, I'm joined by spooky YA romance author, book talker, and Waterstones bookseller, Rosie Talbot. Hey, Rosie.
Hello. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thanks for coming on. How's it going? Must be a wild time for you right now.
Absolutely. My head is still spinning, but I'm smiling. I'm beaming. Life is good.
That's good to hear. Well, let's start off with the big news. I'm sure a lot of people listening don't know what I was talking about when I was saying it must be a crazy time for you. The exciting news that your debut novel, 16 Souls, is coming out 13th of October. What's it all about?
So it is a spooky YA novel set in York about a teenage medium who can see the dead. And to be honest, he'd rather not be able to because they rather complicate his life. But when the ghosts of York start to go missing, he is convinced by the new cute, irritating new seer in town, Sam, to help look for them, and shenanigans ensue.
Sounds great. So lots of supernatural stuff.
Yeah, so it's got a good hefty paranormal dose. There are a lot of ghosts in this book. It's got a touch of horror and quite a bit of romance as well.
Amazing. Well, I'm excited. Is this the first story that you've written, or have there been other drafts or novels before this?
It is the second book I have ever written, but the first book is not really in a healthy state. It's a much more ambitious adult fantasy project that I probably shouldn't have challenged myself to write as my first ever novel. And it's sort of still in, you know, it's in that drawer and I keep going back to it. But this is the first book that I've ever kind of wanted to put out into the world, I suppose.
So you didn't even think about sort of submitting that first one to anything or putting it out to a sort of bigger platform?
I submitted to a round of agents, but kind of knowing in my heart of hearts that it wasn't really a viable debut novel. It's too long for a first novel. I just knew it wasn't quite right for the market and what was happening right now. But, you know, I still did it for the experience. And I'm really glad I did, because I did also submit 16 Souls to agents, and I think having at least done it once before put me in good stead for those rounds.
Yeah, no, definitely. I remember I actually had a similar experience where I tried to do a far too ambitious thing for my first novel, you know, multiple points of view, many characters, huge ensemble. And whilst looking back, it was nowhere near ready to be sent to anyone. As you say, the experience of just learning that kind of system and actually submitting is so valuable when you come to something that is actually of merit and people do want to see it.
Yeah, I mean, just I think writing a novel is so different from being able to craft a pitch and craft a blurb and write a one-page synopsis, all of which are extremely valuable. And I ended up not picking up an agent for 16 Souls and deciding to self-publish. And all of that practice I'd had creating pitches came into play, because I had to create a blurb and I had to create a tagline and all these things. So I'm really glad again that I had that experience.
Yeah. So let's talk about that then, because 16 Souls is actually being published by Scholastic now.
Yes.
What was the journey like here where presumably you've been working on it for a while now. Did you some submissions for it, but eventually decided to self-publish?
Yeah, so I wrote the book because I wanted to write something a little bit more straightforward than my initial first novel, because it was too complicated and I just wanted to write a really good teenage book with one narrative point of view. And I wanted to do that under a structured environment, so I submitted to the Curtis Brown Creative 6-month novel writing course. And I wrote the first chapter of 16 Souls to get on that course, and I got a place. So I had to write the rest of the book. So I did. I wrote the rest of the book, and I think that was back in like 2019, maybe. And then the pandemic hit, and I had done a few rounds of edits and kind of querying. And I'd also submitted to Write Mentor, which was where I met my wonderful mentor, Cynthia Murphy.
Ah, yes.
And I had quite a few sort of requests from agents from that, but nothing came back with the connection that we both needed. And so I remained unagented, and I knew that if I didn't get the book out there soon, I was going to miss this kind of bubble that was happening in the YA market for paranormal stories. So I thought, you know what? I have a vision for this kind of product, as it were, and I am very passionate about this book. And I just knew in my guts that this was the one. So I thought, I'm going to self-publish. The only reason I felt confident doing that was because I had joined TikTok, and my account had grown a lot faster than I ever anticipated that it would. And I have this wonderful community of incredibly supportive readers who were like, yeah, we want to read this book. So I started the process of self-publishing. I announced December last year that it was going to happen for October. And I was ready to go. Everything was kind of sorted. I was just waiting to kind of commission a print run. And then Scholastic swooped in and said, hey, we've heard you've got this spooky novel and we'd really like to read it. So I sent it to them. They had a read, and within a week they'd offered on two books.
Wow. That's,
yeah, it was a whirlwind.
Yeah. And it's so far from traditional, whilst in the end ending up going through Scholastic, a traditional publisher. It must have been how much work did you put into the self-publishing at that point? I mean, was it, you know, it was all done, ready to go. You were just on the marketing at that point.
Yeah. And I had a few distribution issues I needed to sort out, but primarily it was almost all done. And I'm sure there are a lot of people who would be like, well, why would you go with a traditional publisher then? Because you've done all that work. But I was honestly exhausted. I was so doing it self-publishing successfully is very hard. There are a lot of books that get published every year, and raising your head above the parapet and being noticed is hard. It's long hours, and it meant that I had no writing time whatsoever. I couldn't even think about writing another book. It was 100% all about marketing and distribution and essentially running a small business. And what Scholastic offered was they offered me my writing time back, because they're going to take care of a lot of the things that I have to do as a self-published author but don't love doing. And I get to do all the fun stuff, like making a fool of myself on TikTok, hanging out with bookish people and writing another book. So it was just the right offer for me at the right time, and took a lot of weight off my shoulders. Yeah. And I think there's so much merit to self-publishing. I'm not saying I would never self-publish again. I'm so glad of all the experience I had, but I know that this is the right decision for me for this book at this time.
Yeah, well, that's great. It's really good that you sort of are confident enough in that decision to say, yeah, I know this was 100% the correct thing to do. Because you work as a bookseller at Waterstones.
I do.
Did that sort of access to the industry, that the sort of knowledge of knowing how things work in that way, help when you were, I guess, first of all, trying to look at self-publishing?
Yeah, I think being a bookseller gives you face-to-face access with readers, as does being on social media, actually. But being in a bookshop, you get to see what people are picking up off shelves, what they're coming in and asking for. You start to see trends in the market. You see what covers are selling, which, you know, what people are browsing. You get to chat to readers every single day. And then you also get all the behind the scenes stuff. Like, you understand how orders are processed and how companies source books and which books are the big ones coming up. So it just helps give me like an inside knowledge to the industry that help me pick up on trends, I suppose, and know that if I don't get this book out now, I'm probably going to miss the boat and have to wait 10 years until it comes around again. And that gave me the confidence to be like, let's do this.
That's great. And also a little bit scary as well, that you sort of, with that knowledge comes the pressure of, you know, that there's almost a time limit on a certain trend, a certain style, a certain genre.
Yeah, I think there can be. But I mean, that time limit's still a number of years. It's not like it's sort of over in a flash in the pan. But in the publishing industry, that's very quick, because books take a long time to kind of write and then edit and publish, several years. So I knew that if I waited to try and get an agent, which was never guaranteed, then I probably wouldn't get to put Charlie and his ghost out into the world. And it's a story I'm so passionate about. I really just want to find readers who love it and hope it finds a home with people.
Yeah. So speaking of finding those readers, reaching out, interacting with the community, let's talk about TikTok, more accurately, the BookTok community. What was it that made you start posting on TikTok, getting into that?
Well, I was on Instagram because when I started social media, TikTok wasn't really a thing. So I've been on Instagram for about 3 years, building a little community of readers, and I loved it. I was posting every day and taking aesthetic pictures of books, and it was really good fun. And then they sort of just started the reel feature, possibly because of TikTok springing up and becoming popular. And I saw an article, I think, I can't remember where, sort of saying that there was this big book community on TikTok. And I thought, hold on a second, I'm missing out on an extraordinarily large number of book recommendations I could be getting from this other community of readers on TikTok. Let's see what that's about. Started an account thinking maybe if I was lucky, a couple of thousand people might follow me. And then my account grew quite quickly, which was a huge surprise to me, but very, very welcome. And it's a wonderfully engaged community. There are so many important discussions that go on. There is a dangerous number of fabulous book recommendations. My shelves are heaving. But yeah, I love it on there. I love everybody.
You're up to over 100,000 followers now.
Yes. I'm very surprised, but very grateful.
Which is crazy. I mean, it's one of those numbers that you can't even picture. It's so large. Like if you tried to picture that many people, it's just, my brain just then just is a blur of crowd.
I know, it's terrifying. I try not to think about it actually, because it is quite terrifying. Especially I've had a few videos kind of go over a million, and I'm like, that a million people have seen my face, that's incredibly weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now I went on your TikTok and I scrolled all the way through, and just because I'm a curious kind of person like that, and the difference between your newer stuff, which is sort of very fitted and formed, and you have a very much a template, a style, and the earlier stuff where, first of all, there's a lot less of your face and there's a lot more book covers and, like, as you said, aesthetic pictures of shelves. How much has it evolved, like your book talk, from when you first started to now?
I mean, it definitely has evolved. I don't know if I've analyzed it. I'm certainly, anything I'm doing, I'm not doing on purpose.
Okay.
I'm very much winging it. I don't plan my content in advance particularly. I just hop on and record whatever I'm thinking or feeling, whatever books I'm excited about. I do a lot of tales from the stock room, so I have quite lovely interactions with customers at work, and I write them down as little stories on my phone and then record them and share them with the world, as you do on your lunch break. And they're quite popular because they're, you know, heartwarming and feel good and often quite funny because the public are magnificent.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So I just kind of have a little app on my phone that I write inspiration down when an idea occurs to me. And then, of course, the community asks questions. So people will ask for specific book recommendation lists. And I love those because I get to sit down and do research and put my bookseller brain on and think, okay, right, what's a really good book that this person's going to love? And I love doing that as well. But yes, it has evolved. I know that sort of videos where I'm just chatting away often do quite well, even though they're less structured, but I don't know. Maybe people like the curls. I'm not sure.
You always do it with a nice backdrop as well. You've really found the best spots, I think, to do your reels.
I have built the best spot because everybody has recommended so many books that I bought them all. And they live behind me on that massive wall of books that I'm working my way through as a reader.
Oh, yes, yes. The infamous to be read pile.
Oh, yes.
Which only gets bigger.
Oh, it's monumental.
So what advice would you give somebody looking to join the Book Talk community?
Do it now. Like, just, you know, but I think particularly if you're an author and you're thinking about publishing in any capacity, it's a fabulous place to find a community of readers who will engage and enjoy your work. So hop on the platform, start an account, and then just start watching videos about books. And you can tailor your content by saying, I am interested in this and I'm not interested in that. And within the book community as well, there are definitely smaller communities of particular types of reader based on the different genres that they like to read. So you'll find different hashtags, follow those hashtags, engage with that content, and then you can start making your own. And again, just talk about the books that you like, talk about your style as a reader. I mean, there is endless potential content ideas. And then it's just about building a community, really. Just do what you feel comfortable with. Be honest, have fun, and make friends. I think it's making those connections is ultimately what brings so much joy to being on the platform.
Yeah. And it is about joy. Like, it's about, I feel like TikTok, in the same way as lots of social media and blogs and things like that, you should do them because you enjoy them. Because if you're not enjoying it, I feel like it really will translate, and then people won't enjoy watching them or reading them or whatever the platform is.
Yeah. And I think it's hard for a lot of authors because we're not all extroverts. We don't all want to prance about on, you know, 5 to 20 second videos. But there's a lot of pressure from publishers to engage in marketing because it is so important to, again, just try and get that visibility. Yeah. And TikTok is a platform that offers the potential to suddenly go viral out of nowhere. And you hear so many authors attest to their book sales suddenly leaping up because their one single video went viral. And it happened to Cynthia Murphy, actually, Win, Lose, Kill, Die. It was one video that did extraordinarily well. And we sold out. Waterstone sold out within a few days and they had to reprint. Wow. And I'm so excited for her because it's a fabulous book and everybody should read it. But it just goes to show that it can suddenly just happen, and it probably won't be one of your videos. It'll be somebody else's video on the platform. But if you're on there as an author, they can tag you, you know, you can see that, you can share that content. So it's definitely worth having a presence on there, even if you don't necessarily want to create a lot of content yourself.
Yeah, just to be there, just to be present in a way so that people can interact with you. It's good advice, even if you are introverted and scared to engage too much in a platform like that. Going back to some of the more technical stuff about your work. So you self-published, then, well, you were going to self-publish, now picked up by Scholastic. Even, you know, being involved as a bookseller in publishing, was it scary kind of doing this all thing by yourself?
Oh, absolutely terrifying. It's such a big step. And I think there's so much pressure put on the debut as well. Like, we're kind of told as authors that it's the biggest, most important book of your life because it's sort of the basis for your career. And I had some people saying, oh, you must self-publish, it's the only way forward. And I had other people saying, no, like, don't do that. It's a waste. It's such a good book. You should never self-publish it because, a publisher will want it. And it's like, for a start, self-publishing is phenomenal. And the quality of books out there, like, it's just not what it used to be. Mm-hmm. But I was still kind of finding myself, I suppose, justifying to people, be like, oh, who's it coming out with? And I'd be like, oh, actually, I'm doing it myself. And I could see something shift in them. Now, I didn't see that in booksellers, interestingly enough. I didn't see that in people in the industry. I just saw that in readers occasionally. And I worry that there is still this perception that self-publishing isn't as high a quality as traditional, but in many cases, it certainly is. So I was a bit nervous that people would hear I was self-published and not be interested, but also vice versa. Perhaps there's a lot of people who only read indie books, so they would hear that I was self-published and definitely be interested. So I think it goes both ways.
Yeah.
But knowing how things work on the inside, I think I just knew how much the odds were against me for it doing well, and that was scary. But it was also fuel. It made me more determined to be like, okay, I am going to do the best that I possibly can do. I'm going to pull out all the stops and put in all the effort and just hope that luck is on my side. And it turns out it has been on my side. I think there's a huge amount of luck involved in this industry. And I feel extremely grateful that it seems to be smiling on me at the moment.
Yes, I would say you can increase your chances. And I think that the output that you've put on TikTok across other social medias has definitely helped to sort of increase your chances of getting lucky, as you have being signed by Scholastic, which is amazing.
Yeah, I think it's about being visible. I mean, as well, when I was putting the book together, I really wanted to spend my money on an amazing cover and on really strong editing and typesetting. So I was, for me, putting out a book that I was extremely proud of. And I think that definitely helped, because it's a level of professionality that when Scholastic took a look at it, hopefully they were like, great, this is a very tight timescale. I mean, they have only moved the publication date back by 1 week. So there was no time, you know, if they wanted to do a massive structural edit, there was no time. They had to be happy with this as a product that they could go to market with quickly. Yeah. And I was able to deliver that because I was hoping to deliver that to the public myself. So, you know, it's something I'm very, very proud of. And I think that appealed to them, as well as obviously my visibility. And they're just so passionate about the story. And I'm so grateful. Like, they're absolutely incredible. Like, the support I've had from Scholastic and the passion for this book is, you know, it's lit me up from the inside, because I was at a point of being incredibly tired just because of all the effort from moving forward with my self-publishing. And they've lit that fire again, and that passion to kind of get this book out there.
Amazing. I mean, that's exactly what you want from a publisher. You just want that extra support.
Yeah, they've been amazing. They are amazing. I'm very grateful for them.
And so now that it is part of the big machine getting put out into the world October 13th, are you going to look into maybe working with a literary agent?
Yeah, I still don't have a literary agent. A lot of people asked me when the offer was made, are you going to get an agent now? And I didn't want to rush into it. It's a very important relationship, and I want to make sure I find the right person who's very passionate about what I do, and we get on really well. So I didn't want to rush into anything just because I had this offer on the table, and I was able to seek legal advice elsewhere to help me work through the contract on my own. So I didn't need to find an agent right then, but I think they do something incredibly valuable, and I will certainly look to work with an agent in the future when I've got my next manuscript ready to go.
Yes. And speaking of, it is a two-book deal that you've signed.
Yeah. So I'm working on Charlie 2, doesn't have a title yet, Charlie 2. And then so it'll be a duology. And then after that, I'll work on something fresh and new, and hopefully find an agent to help me find a home for that book.
Okay. So you're set on it just being a duology?
Yeah. I mean, so 16 Souls, when you read it, it doesn't need to be a duology. It is wrapped up as it is. Even though I always saw it as a duology, I didn't want to leave anybody on a cliffhanger. So if somebody prefers to read a standalone, you can read 16 Souls as a standalone, and you're going to feel complete. There's a complete character arc. There's, you know, there's explanations for most things, but there is that kind of openness to it where the world is so much bigger and there could be another story in that world. And I seeded ideas in book one that I can pick up for book two. And after book two, I mean, who knows, maybe Scholastic will change their mind and think, you know what, we can have more of these. But again, I will be writing it as a complete adventure. So if you just pick that one up and that's the first one you pick up, or that's the only one you want to read, you'll still be satisfied with that story.
Sure. I mean, I guess that's how Harry Potter kind of starts. The first three Harry Potter books are sort of, this is a year at school, open and shut. Open and shut, open and shut.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm not saying that you're the next, this is the next Harry Potter, but
I mean, I wouldn't mind my own theme park.
Yeah.
Wouldn't say no.
Awesome. Well, very exciting to hear that you're working on a sequel, a follow up, and that you haven't gone for the classic trap of wanting to make a trilogy.
No, I mean, I love duologies. Some of my favorite series are duologies rather than trilogies. And I mean, I love a trilogy too. And I love a standard. I just love all books. Really, I just love books.
You just like books and stories, really?
Yeah, I do. But I'm really excited. I'm currently plotting, and I love these characters, and I love hanging out with them. They're fabulous. So I'm just really enjoying being back in Charlie's head and getting to hang out with my favorite imaginary people.
Amazing. You only sound a little bit insane when you say that, but it's lovely to hear. And I can just tell that that enthusiasm will jump out of the page when this book gets put out into the world and everyone gets a chance to read it.
I hope so.
And with that, we have the final question. As always, Rosie, if you were stranded on a desert island with a single book, which book would you take?
Okay, I'm going to be really bold and I'm going to take a risk because I am a risk taker and I'm going to pick a book I haven't actually read yet.
Oh,
I know. I'm going to pick Unraveler by Frances Hardinge because it's high on my TBR. It's brand new out and I have read her writing before and I know I love her books. So it's a fairly safe bet that I'm going to love this. I've also had friends tell me it's her best one yet. And again, I've read her books. I love them. So that is a bold claim. And it's a decently chunky book as well. So I feel like, you know, if I need a decent amount of reading material, it's going to get me through.
Okay. Well, it sounds like it's not too risky.
I mean, it is an unread book. So it's not like I'm picking a firm fave. I think if I was picking a firm fave, I would pick Blackwood Farm by Anne Rice.
Okay.
Mainly because it's got ghosts in it. And it's one that I kind of keep going back to every few years. I'll reread it, and it's kind of a comfort one. And again, it's quite lengthy, so it'll keep me going for a while.
Well, I'm a fan of the bold go in with something you haven't read, and if it's an author you love, then it's usually relatively safe bet that you'll enjoy it to some degree, at least.
I'm pretty confident I'm going to love it.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Rosie, for coming on the podcast and sharing your experience and your writing adventures with me and everyone listening.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
And for anyone listening, if you do want to keep up with what Rosie is doing, you can follow her on all socials at Merrowchild. That's MERROW Child. Any origin story for that name, Rosie?
So Merrow, I believe, means mermaid in Irish. Okay. I'm not Irish and I'm terrified of water. So it just sort of seemed like a natural choice. Honestly, I don't know. I think it came from a dream I don't know. I just like the sound of the word.
Oh, okay.
And it's sort of
reason
stuck.
Enough.
Yeah.
There you go. So follow Rosie on Merrowchild on all the socials. And to make sure you don't miss an episode of this podcast, follow us on Twitter at Right and Wrong UK or on Instagram at Right and Wrong Podcast. Thanks again, Rosie. And thanks to everyone listening. We'll catch you in the next episode. Thanks for hanging around until the end. If you're interested in starting your own podcast but aren't really sure what that looks like, I can't recommend Zencastr enough. It's so simple to host, record, and download your podcast with, and it even has a built-in transcription AI. It functions entirely in the internet browser, which means all your guests have to do is click on a link and they'll be brought into the conversation. If you click on the link in the description, you'll get 30% off the first 3 months. All you have to do is click on the link in the description. Thanks again for supporting the show, and we'll see you in the next episode.